Episode of Debate Night. Today we've got an exciting show. We're going to talk about the, some would say, controversial open at Austin. With that course, we're going to talk a little about Kristen Tatar's streak, some updates to the Gannon Burr lawsuit, and just a few other topics. Today we've got a great cast. We got Brody Smith, as always.
Hey, shout out to the PDGA. I don't do this very often. I don't understand their cut rule that was implemented, but for whatever reason, I somehow made the cash cut line by one shot because of this weird rule.
Oh.
And the streak continues.
The streak's alive. Okay. We're also joined by Hunter, the returning champion at the moment.
I don't know what rule he's talking about. I literally did the math. I was like, Brody missed cash. That sucks.
Yeah.
But hey, there you go. Streak's alive.
The streak
weird
is alive.
Weird Jeff Spring email came through yesterday and was like, we're actually getting top 47 cash. And it's like, I'll take $50. I don't care.
We're also joined by Steven today.
I'm so happy to be back, everybody. Thanks.
And then we're also rounding out the group here. We have Matthew with us.
Happy to be here, guys. I got to tell you, at a tournament 2 weeks ago, I got made fun of for being on Debate Night. So back with a vengeance.
Whoa.
Wow.
It was brutal.
Rude.
Just for appearing on the show or because you didn't win?
No. They saw me on the show. They were like, you're from Debate Night. I was like, yeah. And then I used allegedly in a sentence. And they said, makes sense. Someone from Debate Night would use the word allegedly.
Dang.
What does that mean?
We're just trying not to get sued.
Exactly.
On the show right now.
That is true. I am allegedly here.
If you're watching this show right now, you bully. You leave Matthew alone right now. I'm telling you.
Alleged bully.
Unbelievable. All right,
wow.
We're going to hop right into it. Speaking of streaks, you know, Brody's streak might actually
this
be
golf the, is so welcoming.
Brody might have the best streak right now, but we're going to talk about a different streak that just ended. Kristen Tatar's streak of podium finishes at Elite Series events that she's had forever, has come to an end. You know, disc golf, the climate is changing. You know, there we talk a lot about records in certain sports that are like the unbroken or the unbreakable records. People talk about Cal Ripken Jr.'s Ironman streak of games played or Wayne Gretzky's records that he has in hockey. Will we ever see a streak like that in the FPO division ever again, doing something that Kristen Tatar just did? Brody, what do you think?
I mean, I would say signs probably point to no. I think with how the FPO division is going, you're only going to see players continue to increase their skill set. I mean, it wasn't very long ago that one of you two, I can't remember who it was, but one of you two made the bet that Paul was not going to finish outside the top three all season. I don't know which one it was.
That was me.
And if you look at his season right now, he hasn't finished in the top three in any of the events. So that bet also wasn't like the craziest bet when you made it. FPO, we just got to think they are, for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years behind MPO. And eventually they are going to catch up. The other thing to think about too is like you look at someone like Caroline Henderson, who literally just came into the sport and has made a huge splash. How many other FPO players out there are like, wait a second, I can just like play really hard and practice and go out there and start making a lot of money. I think you're going to start seeing it continue to increase over the next few years.
I do get that. There's the timer. I do get that. That vibe with the FPO field where it's still at that breaking point where new players can get in really quick. I feel like the MPO field has kind of moved past that a little bit, but it's still prevalent in FPO. Hunter, what do you think? Are we going to see that streak again?
Well, first off, I think that bet was kind of crazy when Trevor made it
because
I was eating Chick-fil-A in like February. So, but no, if we're going to see this again in FPO, it has to start essentially right now. As the field continues to grow and get deeper, it's just going to get harder and harder to do. And MPO, I mean, we had a similar streak in 2015, Paul McBeth, he went the entire season without finishing outside the top three, and he actually only got third twice in that season. That's not going to happen again. Like that, as MPO's gotten deeper, you know, you might see like a top 10 streak or a top 20 streak, but a top three streak like that's not going to happen. I think as players continue to develop, as the field continues to get deeper, even as the field continues to grow with more talent coming in, the field's just going to get deeper as the field gets bigger. So as that happens, then, you know, I can't say it's going to be impossible, but like it's going to get more and more and more improbable. Like an MPO right now, it might as well be impossible. And I think like Brody said, we're a few years away from that being true for FPO as well.
Yeah, for sure. Steven, what do you think? Oh, can't hear Steven. Can't hear Steven. There he is.
Yeah, I'm back. Hopefully that doesn't kill into my time there. But no, short answer is no. Like Hunter and Brody have both said, field's getting too big. Something that you mentioned, Trevor, Wayne Gretzky, right? Him, along with a lot of other legends in sports, people talk about how the field was not as competitive when they were coming up, which made their streaks possible. And so, as they've talked about, the field is getting bigger. You see all these new people coming in. I don't see that type of podium streak. She has never, except for this past weekend, in an Elite Series or an NT, finished outside the podium. And so with that, I think also the course design for FPO, a lot of people are talking about it. It's starting to get revamped. And as that does, you're going to see a lot of the field start to come together and make things more volatile and give a lot more parity to the standings. And so I just don't see anybody being able to replicate anything like that in FPO or MPO moving forward.
Yeah, seems like it's going to be tough. Matthew, what do you think about that?
I think we're all in agreement here for the most part, but I'll say I think we got like one or two more runs potentially. Like, we got to calm down a little bit. Kristen's been going crazy. It was one event, you know? I think we could see her do the exact same thing she's done once or twice more, or new talent. Everyone's talking about Evelina all the time. If she fixed some things, like, we're definitely moving towards the fact that we will never get this to happen again, but I think there's a chance we have one or two more big runs before we're done with it. And honestly, I'm kind of excited to see some of those.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right, Matthew, in the sense that, you know, Kristen could restart this thing and the field has started to tighten up, but she could do it again. And I think for earlier events, you know, this past event kind of hurt that argument, but earlier events showed that Kristen could play not even her best game and win. And top three is a whole different ball game in that field right now, just where the depth is. But, you know, yeah, the window is certainly closing for something like that to happen. Brody, what do you think?
I was going to say, if Evelina starts cashing putts at the end of a tournament to actually win, anything is possible.
That's true.
Obviously, yeah, throwing Evelina's name out there. That was a wild
one. I was just saying, maybe that's all she needs. Right, it's like now. That pressure of like,
listen, I saw her throws. I saw her throws. I forgot what her throws looked like. She could be goaded. Yeah.
No one has ever questioned. She's the best thrower on tour. No one's ever questioned that.
You are right, though. And like everybody jokes about the Evelina thing and is like, we've all kind of accepted, like, oh, she's just not going to figure out the putting. But
she could.
Because it's a mental thing. Like, you could. You know, this stuff does happen. All right. We'll see. Evelina, Matthew's got hope. He's holding out. All right, moving into our next subject. Right now we have Brody at 4 points, Hunter and Steven at three, Matthew at two. Going to talk a little bit about the Gannon win at the Open of Austin. Right now Gannon is in the middle of this lawsuit between him and Prodigy. Now we did get an update that Prodigy had dropped the restraining order and the movement for a preliminary injunction. However, the suit at this point, as of us recording this, I'm sure they'll announce that it's something's resolved like right after the show. But as of us recording this, it still stands. Now, Prodigy, after Gannon won, posted about Gannon's win, you know, as you kind of do. They kind of have to. And the comments were, as you can imagine, quite a field day. One person said, how did you Photoshop the ball and chain off of his ankle? That had a lot of likes. So my question is, you know, this is a weird spot seeing him out there repping Prodigy, wearing them, throwing them to great success, you know, and winning events with Prodigy Plastic. Does Gannon's win help or hurt Prodigy's public perception as they continue the lawsuit against him? Or does it really change nothing at all? Hunter, what do you think?
I think, overall, I think it doesn't really change anything at all. His win, that is, because like if anything, I guess you could say it might slightly help it, because there might be some people that, you know, see Gannon win but aren't in the know of disc golf enough to understand the lawsuits going on. But like people who are in the know, who are following disc golf closely, they already have an opinion on the Prodigy v. Gannon situation, and they're not going to change that opinion. At least, I mean, it would take something pretty shocking, I think, for people to change it. So yes, you're going to see it again. You're going to see a post that's going to have a bunch of Prodigy hate spewed in the comments. Yeah, that's going to happen again, but I don't think it's necessarily changing people's perception. It's just giving people a chance to voice it again. So I think it gives people opportunity. But again, I think that the people who are going to see that stuff are people who are in the sport enough to already be in the know of what's going on, and people who are just kind of casual watchers, then like, if anything, it might help them slightly. But realistically, I don't think it really changed much at all. I think people are either Team Prodigy or Team Gannon, and it's just kind of be as it is.
Okay. Okay. Steven, do you think it's going to change things?
I think it certainly does not help Prodigy. When asked on Nick and Matt show last night if he would be throwing Prodigy come Worlds time, Gannon got really uncomfortable, said no comment. I mean, if you're in it, you're in it. You're saying that you're throwing Prodigy. If you're not, you're not. But this limbo that he's in is definitely not helping. I mean, we all know that at the first opportunity, Gannon is gone. So most people that watch the Pro Tour know about the lawsuit. I mean, you may have a couple casual fans that see the social media post, but almost every single person that is watching the tour knows what's going on with the lawsuit. Prodigy may cash a few bucks here and there from him winning, but it's a temporary influx of cash for them, and that's it, which I think at this point, that's all they're looking for. But I think that regardless of what happens, Gannon's winning makes his stock go up, and that's only going to help his next sponsor not doing anything for Prodigy. I do think that this hurts them, him winning and getting this much notoriety while they're in the middle of this lawsuit.
Okay. Interesting point there. I like that. Matthew, what do you think about it?
I think I'm going to like full on disagree here.
Okay.
You know, the whole point of this argument here is that Prodigy was like, we're going to lose money by not having Gannon Burr. And everyone was like, come on, you know, you're shackling down this kid. And then we're a couple weeks in and Gannon wins, proving their point. He's not happy to throw Prodigy. He's not happy with all of that. Imagine if he walked out and said, I loved this disc after he won compared to not. Like, they're proving his point, or their point. And on Gannon's end, I think it just makes a Gannon supporter say, like, hey, yeah, we're right. This guy's great. But I think it actually helps Prodigy a little bit, because if you look back, you're like, all right, the exact same thing they said was going to happen just happened, and we're a couple weeks into the season. Like, come on now.
There's something to be said for, you know, all those complaints about those discs, but they are working for the guy. There's something to be said about that. Brody, what do you feel about it?
So I think like PR 101, when you're in a controversy, is to like just hide, just like disappear. So like any celebrity that's going through something weird, you rarely ever see them posting on social media. They just disappear until it gets resolved. So I'm pretty sure on Prodigy's side, they wish, maybe, I don't know, it'd be interesting to hear from them, but I think they would be better off if like Gannon was continuing to finish like 30th, like he has been. And because then people will look at Gannon and be like, well, yeah, obviously he's not playing well right now because he's got all this other stuff going on and it's like a problem. And then no one, this is an issue for them. Like they don't want to, I'm sure they didn't want to make that post congratulating him because they knew the comments that were coming. This is a PR nightmare situation.
Yeah, I actually agree with that. I think that Matthew's right. I think that him winning, actually there's a good side to that, in the sense that like it's Prodigy basically can be like, oh, how bad are our discs really? But then from a PR standpoint, Brody's right. They didn't want to make that post. You know, they know what's coming. They're not blind. They're not like, man, I bet people are going to love this. Like they see the irony there, but you have to make it, you know, and they have to show that they're upholding, you know, their end of things. Cause that's, you know, I think that's what's going down right now. It's a weird situation. That's for sure. I think we all can agree that a resolution needs to come soon so that we can just move past it at this point and just, yeah. Cause it's very weird. Like watching a player under those, that kind of situation playing on tour and like having success. It's very interesting. Quick points update. Brody at 6 in the lead right now, Hunter and Steven at 5, Matthew at 4. Now this, I think, is kind of the hot topic of the day. The Open of Austin featured a new course. It was on a golf course property, and it saw plenty of backlash, including some from very popular players. It's not often that we see a course get smeared like this one did. I mean, on the Jomez practice round, you have very big name players just basically, I mean, you could tell they were, some of them were disgusted with the course. Like, they did not like it. I think even some of them were holding back probably what they really felt. You know, they were in the press conference, there was comments being made. It really got crushed on. So my question is, was the course deserving of this treatment, and how should players handle their feelings towards a course when they're playing out on the pro tour? Steven, lead off for us.
So first and foremost, the course, in my opinion, does not deserve the backlash it's getting. How should players handle their feelings? I think that they should do exactly what they did. Speak up. You have an opinion, speak your mind. Do I think that they should go and trash the course necessarily? No, maybe handle those higher comments up with the pro tour, like go higher up with the pro tour to talk to them about it. But I think that you should speak up. Ultimately, it's a sport. You are an individual athlete, and your opinions, if you want to make them heard, make them heard. Now, going back to the course, I will say, like I said, I love the course. Only five holes had a more than 50% par ratio, which I think is great. You had a huge mix of bogeys and birdies. You had great greens, lots of, what do they say on the cast, adulation in the greens to make it make you have to think about things a lot more than you typically see with some of these courses. And the fact that the winner shot 22 down, you know, I think is amazing. I think it even brings it to closer to what you typically see within the standard courses. And so you're not seeing a huge deviation in scoring, but it's a course that really had a lot of lines, a lot of interesting things that made players think, whether it was off the drive or on the green. And for those reasons, I really do like the course.
Okay. All right. Matthew, he likes the course. Did you like it?
I did. Listen, we've all had that buddy who goes to a new course and typically shoots like under par and just messes up and shoots over par and then says, worst course on the planet Earth. They could be playing Maple Hill and they'll say that. Like, this is the same thing. We have a couple really vocal people saying, this is the worst course ever. It's the first year. No one's expecting perfection on the first year. But then you have other people like Simon Lazotte said, hey, I really didn't think it was that bad. But he also said, I didn't even know I was going to win second place. Like, we have a couple people that are just like, oh, I don't like it. I'm going to yell loudly to my fan base. And it's like, we're 1 year in. Come on. Like, I think it did have a really fun kind of way of moving through some of the holes. And I've got to sit down and watch the rest of the coverage there. But it just, there was nothing that I saw that was like, we should just be like, this should never exist again on tour. Like, it was just like the most stone faced. And when you have players just like actively complaining in interviews, very loudly, it's just like there's no way to make a positive out of it. Like, come on now.
Yeah, it definitely was pretty deafening for sure. Brody, you were there, so what do you feel about it?
I'm very interested in talking with Yuli this week because he was obviously one of the vocal people against the course, and I was one of the vocal people for the course. So I really want to know, like, in his mind, what makes a good course versus what makes a bad course? What makes a good hole versus what makes a bad hole? To me, this course didn't have any of the pieces that, and I'm going to go a little bit over my time here because I think I saved up a little bit of time here. This course did not have any of the flukiness that we see on other courses of where there's just trees in the middle of the fairway. There's random things that can happen. And I mean, and this is the thing that like blows my mind. We literally just got done playing with Waco, which is one of the more quirky, unique courses on tour, where we have like a 220-foot shot through a tight gap, which is also very similar to the tight gap we had on 17. No one was complaining about these holes. This course also had a lot of holes that remind me of Winthrop. I've never heard anyone outrightly complain about Winthrop being a bad course. I think it's new. I think people didn't understand it at first. The OB lines were hard to see initially. And so pros, and also the wind. That's so weird. People want like 10 under par to be like the normal round all the time. Guess what? If we didn't have terrible wind the first day and it wasn't freezing cold, it would have been. The winner would have been over 30 under par. It would have been just like any other course we play. So I'm very interested in hearing actual critique of why the course was bad, and not just simply, this course sucks, we should never come back.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'd be curious to hear what Yuli says, because I feel like I've heard a lot of that as well. Just like, where's the real reasons that it wasn't good? It's been kind of smoke and mirrors. Hunter, What's your opinion?
Just a few things that have been said. First, the saying that we've never heard people call Winthrop Gold bad course design is hysterical, because that's like, I mean, that's probably the most common course has been told it is bad course design. It's everywhere. People laugh at it all the time. They say it's a putt-putt course.
Not from the pros, though.
I disagree with that statement. Secondly, Matthew said, you know, it's like when a friend goes to a course and, you know, plays bad and then trashes the course after. Well, what we saw was Paul was one of the people that was talking about how he didn't like the course. And I mean, the dude was on feature card or lead card final day with a chance to win. So it wasn't that scenario either. I also didn't hear anyone say this is the worst course ever. I hate this place. I don't want to be back here. I heard some people say I don't like the course design. And I think the way they did it is actually exactly how it should be done. During the Jomez practice round, we saw people, you know, going through. They're playing a practice round, a casual practice round, talking about how they don't really like the course. What's wrong with that? You see Paul in the post-round interview talking about how he didn't like some of the holes down the stretch. He didn't think they played very well. What's wrong with that? What would have been wrong is if any of those people went publicly to social media and be like, hey, I have a change.org petition to get this course off the pro tour. We hate it. We don't want to be back here, blah, blah, blah. That would be wrong. We didn't see that. So I don't think it deserved the hate it got, but I also don't think anyone was in the wrong in giving it hate.
I will say,
What was the critique, though, Hunter? Like, what? Yeah. Sorry, not to take your question though, but like what was you can't just say this hole sucks.
His critique was hole 17. He said that he threw what he felt was one of the best drives.
I'm not even talking about Paul. I'm talking about Jomez too, because that what Paul said on 17 was a stupid thing to say. He was way far left. Also, why are you throwing a backhand there? Simply step out and throw a forehand flick. It's just not a shot that he was comfortable throwing. So. And again, people are going to be like, oh, Paul's way better than you. You don't know what you're talking about. And that's fine. He finished way better than me. But, like, that was the shot that he should have done. He should have straddled out and been right in the middle of the gap and thrown a forehand. Just because you're not comfortable throwing that doesn't mean the hole sucks.
I will say.
Sorry, but what would Jomez say? That's what I'm curious, because I didn't watch the practice round.
It was just kind of chirping throughout. I mean, the funniest line was Yuli saw Eagle and said, Eagle, what do you think of this course? And Eagle's like, it's fun. And he goes, ah, F you. That was hilarious. It was very like practice round. Like they're just a bunch of guys talking of like,
but there was,
they didn't like this aspect of a hole. They didn't like this aspect of a hole. Like
I actually do agree with Matthew's point. I think he was referring more to the Jomez practice round than Paul's comments, because the guys in the Jomez practice round, from what I watched of it, some of them were throwing bad shots and then immediately saying, this is just a dumb hole. I did see that, because I will say the open at Austin course, you get to like the hole, for example, that's like the spike hyzer out of the gap. That's not a shot you throw often. So you're going to throw three shots, not get left enough. And some people are just going to go, this is a dumb hole.
Didn't that hole get changed?
Yeah, they ruined it.
There you go.
Because it wasn't that hole. They
were playing it before the change.
No, I know. There was limbs that forced you to have to throw under a low ceiling. So the only way of getting there was actually throwing a unique shot, which was like a low. Like I was throwing the disc from my knees, like actively throwing lower into high and then nose up. That was the only way of getting there. And it was a very unique shot. And too many people were complaining because they were throwing their basic shot of like nose down hyzers and weren't getting over there. And then being like, this hole sucks. It's impossible. But they were also, I threw a forehand turnover into the circle too in the practice round. There was multiple ways of attacking that hole. And then I guess either enough people complained or the right people complained. Right. And so they just literally turned it mid practice. Well,
I think the ultimate question is, like you were saying, Brody, is what does make a disc golf hole bad? Other than, like, I think we all understand that the fairness of a hole, like if there's trees in the middle of the intended line, that is bad, right? That makes a bad disc golf hole. But if you take that away, and a line is just a unique line, but it's a doable line, you know, at what point is it not a good disc golf hole? And I think I'd like to hear that from some of the pros that didn't like the course.
Yeah.
Because, like, I don't think there's a problem with asking for a shot that is not a typical shot. Like, I think that's something that disc golf should explore more, because it's something that's unique to the game is being able to see a line that isn't typical, but then create that line with your disc. Because, like, that's what we talk, all the pros talk about. We love disc golf because there's limitless potential of the frisbee, but then if the stock hyzer isn't there, they get frustrated. So there's a little bit of hypocrisy there.
And this is the thing that's kind of crazy to me is, like, I love Champions Cup. W.R. Jackson, one of my favorite courses on tour. I think it's a great wooded course. However, when you get outside of the woods and you don't actually have specific lines and you have to create the line, there was a lot of holes that we were throwing very similar shots. There just weren't trees.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people bashed hole nine. Hole nine, like that late hyzer flip turnover that was like 450 feet.
Yeah.
That hole is almost the identical shot you need to throw. I believe it's hole nine at Northwoods Black, but there's just no trees. And no one ever complains about that hole being way too difficult or way. That's where it's like, I have a hard time when people are just like complaining on a hole is like way too hard. It's like, we've played holes like this in the woods, which is way harder.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. I'm very interested to hear what Yuli said, because he obviously was one of the people that hated the course. And I can't wait to kind of break down exactly what he thought.
Yeah, make sure you tune into Tour Life to see that. I'll have to hear that.
Because I'm going to rip into him.
I'll be curious if he has the same opinion post-tournament. Because, I mean, it was during a practice round. We've all played practice round with a bunch of buddies. And, like,
true.
You think it sucks. And then next thing you know, you're like, oh, well, you know what? It actually was all right once I saw it play out.
I was talking to Sexton right before we teed off final round. And he... you know, I was trying to just ask questions of like, why do you think this is bad or whatever. And it seemed like he was still kind of ho-hum on the course. It didn't seem like he had changed his opinion of the course being good.
Well, certainly controversial. We'll see if the Open at Austin ever makes it back to that course. I'd have to bet no at this point.
That was my bold prediction.
But it is kind of sad that, like,
that's sad.
It would be unfortunate if if unique courses were immediately thrown out like that all the time, because that doesn't really necessarily say good things would change.
Can I add a question? I was just going to say, is the Disc Golf Pro Tour giving players too much power here? Because at what point is the Disc Golf Pro Tour just like, hey, you all have to play this course, suck it up and play it. if this is going to be the trend of like, oh, if you just have the right players say a course sucks, we won't come back. What is that teaching us? That we can just complain and whine about a course and then we don't have to play it? Like, I don't know.
There's definitely a lot to dig up there.
To Brody's point earlier, I do think that some of the courses, more so historically, some of them have been vetted out that on tour have been like, there's been some very weird gimmicky courses on tour that the only thing that's keeping people from saying they're trash is the history of the course.
Yeah, you cannot tell me De La is a good Disc Golf Pro Tour course and then this course isn't. You have no room to talk if you're saying that.
all right. Let's move on from the courses. There's gonna be a lot more to talk about.
That's exactly where I was headed.
But
I know you didn't want to say it because you're afraid of all the people that love De La.
I'm not afraid of De La people. I might get stoned if I ever step foot on that property, but I'm not afraid of it.
All right, the Bowie Bros will be at De La come this spring, so look out for them there, guys.
Moving on to the next topic. This is something that happened on the course. There was a scary moment out there when Eagle McMahon threw a grenade hitting a camera operator with his shot, badly hurting him. It was pretty gnarly. So when this situation happens, you know, clearly accidental. But how should the Pro Tour be addressing this safety concern going forwards? And what are some solutions that they might be able to implement? Matthew, what do you think?
So when this happened with AB, we were like, oh, whatever, you know. And then this happened to this guy. And whatever, everyone was saying, you know, this could be a concern. We've now pushed it. I don't think this guy had a really, like, better spot to go here. But at some point along the lines, can we not get, like, I don't know, a headset that tells a guy, hey, Eagle's about to throw something really weird. You probably should watch out. Like, we have no idea where this is going to go. This guy was standing there so intently focused on the basket, and then he just gets cracked in the head so hard. And we have, like, three other cameras outside on Eagle, like, spotters, all sorts of stuff. No one can radio him and say, hey, he's about to throw a really weird shot. You should be worried. Like, just because they're pros does not mean they're perfect. This is the same thing. Like, the guy who was standing there when AB got hit, he was doing something, but it looked like he was like, there's no way AB throws over here. This is, you know, I'm right by hazard. Same thing here. This guy's like, oh, Eagle's about to throw in the circle. Like, they're pros. They will make mistakes. That means we need to have some method to make sure people are safe when they do. There's nothing wrong with that. So, as far as that goes, some people mentioned hard hats, and then, like, that's fine. I think there's no issue with that. But, like, just some method to say, hey, dude, you're jammed in the woods right here. Something weird is coming. Let's take care of this. Every other media team in some capacity has this. and the media teams I've worked on, we have this. I understand on the Pro Tour, it's more difficult because we have a lot of space and we've got channels and frequencies, but something like that has to exist. You know, there's got to be some way to make it happen.
Yeah, certainly.
What?
You might have lost Trevor.
Oh. Uh-oh. Hunter, you might have to take over.
I think he's going to, I don't know, I think he's going to say Brody, but he froze.
I don't trust Hunter handing out points.
Yeah. All right.
A million points.
Lead in, Brody, lead in, go.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're back.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. My mic, this cord attached to this mic, I guess I bumped it or something, but it just keeps coming unplugged. Like, very.
Or tape.
Yeah. All right, go ahead, Brody. Jump into it.
I kind of want a Mythbusters episode of what is more dangerous, a golf ball hitting you at its end of its flight or a disc? Because
you volunteer for that?
No. They have those dummies. They have those, like, you know, those like Play-Doh dummies that they can put, the gelatin dummies. But I mean, we saw Eric Oakley at Waco drill some spectator in the chest like that. I feel like that couldn't feel good. It is one of those things, unfortunately, that something like this, as bad as this was, because I'm very queasy with this stuff, but I somehow just passed it on my timeline, the photo of his staples. I mean, first off, he got very lucky. It could have been a lot worse. I was talking to Seth, who kind of handles a lot of the injuries and stuff that go on with tour, and he was telling how, honestly, that was one of the better places that it could have hit him. Because had he like last second looked up or something and it came down, I mean, we're talking potential like long-term vision issues. It could have sliced open his mouth. It could have done a lot of damage if it would have hit his face and not the top of his head. With that being said, though, I think something like this, unfortunately, probably needed to happen for there to be actually change in the Disc Golf Pro Tour. Because it's one thing when it's your staff. It's a completely other thing if it's a spectator. And this is something that needs to be looked at. What is the proper solution? I think the only answer to this is literally you can't put spectators or video people on top of the action. So wherever the disc potentially is trying to land, we need to have a little bit bigger halo to give room for more errant shots or whatnot. And this wasn't even an errant shot. It would have ended up being, 30 feet behind the basket. So it's definitely something that they need to address and need to address quickly before it actually impacts potentially a spectator at this point.
Yeah, it's sad to say, but a lot of times things like this do have to happen in order to enact the change.
And Hunter, it sounds like the guy is having a good recovery, though, that's great to hear.
Yeah. Hunter, what do you think they need to change?
Well, I think first off, it's a good idea for the Pro Tour to make some type of public announcement of either the steps that are already in place, like maybe some of these things that we're talking about are already in place and they just were broken in this case. So at least either remind us of what's in place or say like, hey, these are the steps we're taking. I would imagine that should come in the next day or two. This is a freak accident, but like we've said, it's not something that's like that wild. We've seen, you know, multiple times spectators, different staff members, other things get hit. I mean, it wasn't long ago we had the spotter get domed in the head with Ricky's forehand back like 2 years ago. Like, this has happened time and time again. I mean, at Vegas, we said a change probably needs to happen before someone gets seriously hurt. Now, here we are, two events later, and someone's getting hurt pretty bad. I think the biggest thing is, A, the increased communication, as Matthew brought up, that is kind of already happening. What's tough here is, like, I don't think this was a DGN cameraman. I believe this was a gatekeeper guy. Mm-hmm. So that's also where the Pro Tour might already have that communication in place, but this is an individual organization operating within. But I think a big thing is people just don't need to be that close to the action. Like, I get he's a catch cam. On a hole like this, there's nowhere else you can go. Just get a second angle from like down the line, or just set up a stationary camera aimed at circle two and walk away. Or I don't know, something where we're not in a situation where we ever have to look up and be waiting for a disc to come hit us. I think we just got to be a little bit smarter about how we're covering the sport.
Yeah, certainly was standing in no man's land there. I mean, it was not a great place to be. Steven, do you think there needs to be a change made?
Yes, simple answer, yes. But to Hunter's point, you know, he indicated that this was an independent media organization on the course filming. I think that at some point in time, as the sport continues to grow, the Pro Tour is going to consolidate their media teams to be only the Disc Golf Pro Tour's media team. And so you're not going to have two, three, four different camera operators standing out in the middle of the fairway trying to capture a shot, or however many that they have right now. You're going to have the Disc Golf Pro Tour media catch cam out there, and it's just going to be that one person. You're going to have a lot less likelihood that this type of thing will happen. And when you do have that type of consolidation, the communication makes it a lot easier for you to advise them of what's going on the course and be prepared on where the shots are coming in. Now, how to handle it right now, communication's got to get better. The Pro Tour has to come out with some sort of regulation for their media teams on where you can be. And I think communication of that to the players and indicate whether it's on the caddy book, like, hey, this is where your media teams are going to be. Maybe that helps. Maybe it doesn't. I don't know if that just makes things more difficult. Also, as far as the hard hat thing that was talked about previously, I think that they do have like under the hat style caps that you can put on that don't look ridiculous. And just that little bit of added protection would go a long way, you know, in protecting some of the people that are out there on the course that help, you know, make the coverage what it is. And I think the catch cam is a very important part of that coverage.
Yeah, that'd be a good solution. Just having something protective. Cause I mean, really,
distressing like hockey goalies, baby.
Yeah, the scenario that went down, you know, a grenade shot like straight up, straight down. That's the worst scenario, because you know, a drive straight on, you have a chance to dodge. A lot of times a disc might be slowing down when it, by the time it gets you, this thing is moving downwards. You know, it's got gravity on its side. It is, you know, it was moving. So it was really a nightmare scenario. And you could see, like, people forget how much damage a disc can do until it does some damage. I mean, it's a very sharp, you know, somewhat heavy object moving at a fast speed. It can seriously mess you up.
I saw a tweet real quick that put this picture in my head, and it frightened the crap out of me, of if that would have hit the ground, it would have been like an inch in the ground.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly.
And like it's that. Like, oh gosh, dude.
Yeah, it seriously could have been worse, and luckily he's all right. And yeah, we'll see. I agree with Hunter big time that I think the Pro Tour needs to make some kind of statement, just saying if there wasn't something implemented, this is what's going to happen, or if something was implemented and not put in practice correctly, this was our mistake. Like, I feel like that was a pretty significant injury to happen on your live broadcast to not talk about any further. I don't know that would be a good PR move there. We're going to do a little elimination now before our rapid fire round. Brody and Hunter at 13 and 12 points respectively, moving on to the finals. Steven at 11 and Matthew at 10, unfortunately going to be eliminated today. Brody Smith carrying the lead right now, headed into the rapid fire round. Well, I hope it, for your sake, it isn't a comeback, because you have to lead. But great show from Steven. As Matthew, thank you always for joining. We will see you again sometime for sure. All right, let's move on now to our rapid fire round. All right, Brody Smith, Hunter Thomas, formidable foes, a rivalry born on this show, the original cast of Debate Night. What else can you say? headed into our rapid fire round now. We've got three topics here. I think all of these topics are super subjective. So just going to be looking for the most convincing argument, because I don't even know if I know how I feel about any of them. So I feel like I'm in a good spot here to judge. Now, Brody, you are in the lead. Would you like to go first or second?
I'll go first. I don't care.
Okay. He wants to lead off. First question. Gannon Burr, rising star, won a major last year. Seems like one of the most talented players out there. He seems like every week he's being picked to potentially win. My question simply is there an argument to be made for Gannon Burr being the best player in the world, Brody?
I mean, I think you can certainly make that argument. I think it wouldn't be a hard one to make. However, I don't think currently he is. I definitely look more on the most recent past performances. And as of this year, 2023, Calvin has had a better season so far. He's had closer finishes to the top, where Gannon kind of started a little slower in Vegas and didn't have the greatest Waco performance, which, again, I've talked about how that course is very unique. We've seen some crazy winners come from that tournament. So it's not surprising. I mean, Corey Ellis, for example, got like 110th or something at Waco and then turned around this week and I think is top 10 or 11th, I believe. So not surprising there, but with all things being said, I think obviously recency bias, people can be like, oh, he just won. He's the best player in the world. I think Calvin also had a chance to win this tournament, ended up didn't going his way. But I think Calvin right now is the best player in the world. And I think that would be the easier argument to make versus Gannon, just with him winning and then obviously being in contention in the last two events.
Fair enough. Hunter, what do you think?
I mean, there's definitely an argument to be made for Gannon being the best player in the world, but it's not right. So let's just try to look at this, right? Because Gannon had a very solid finish last year, but you do have to kind of cherry pick stats if you want to make him the best player in the world. So, like, yes, he's 6-3 against Calvin Heimberg since August. That looks pretty great, but he's also 3-5 against Paul McBeth during that same time period. He's been crazy consistent all of last year, but he started this year off with 30th at Vegas and 24th at Waco. Also, Ricky Wysocki, pretty much undisputed best player in the world to end last year. Haven't even seen him yet this year, but you might be saying, well, he started falling off at the end of last year, Hunter. Well, also since August, Ricky and Gannon are 3-3 against each other. So I think there's a lot of arguments that can be made for Gannon. He is probably a future best player in the world, but he's not there yet. I would agree with Brody if you had to put, you know, have me decide right now who's the best player in the world. It's Calvin Heimberg right now.
Yeah, I think any argument made for Gannon at this point is more of a like talent subjective argument. It's not really gonna, you're not gonna find the stats yet. It's more of like going into a tournament, who's your guy? But I do think Calvin really owns the rights to that spot right now. All right, next subject. Brody's still up 1-15-14, headed into subject number two. Hunter will lead off for us here, and this is kind of in his wheelhouse. Cole Radalin has been just a hot topic on the Foundation Podcast Network, all starting with Hunter saying he wouldn't be surprised if he won. I said I would. Argument ensued, bet was made, and he had another good showing, really threatened the win there for a little bit, making me a little nervous at the Open at Austin. So, you know, we do see this happen. You know, it is early in the season. You know, his season last year was nothing to write home about. My question is Cole Radalin a flash in the pan, or is he a blossoming star, Hunter?
Neither. The kid's already a bona fide star. I'm just kidding. In actuality, though, there's been several players that we've seen kind of emerge at certain events. Like you were saying, last year, we also had like Chandler Kramer at the European Open. We've seen Aaron Gossage. We've seen Robert Burrage. And when you look at all these different players, you have to look at their game as a whole, right? And sometimes with certain players, I won't call any of them out, but I think you'll know what I'm talking about. Certain players you see just like gaping holes that you're like, well, yeah, but that is going to make you really hard for you to be a contender regularly at the top. With Cole Radalin, when you watch his game, I mean, the kid in a roundabout way has got it all. I think that, you know, just give him some time. I think he's a blossoming star. I think he's going to be a household name in the next year or two. He feels kind of similar to Isaac Robinson, I think, is on the same career path where, like, if you look at it, yeah, there's some small holes, but it's nothing glaring. Like, hey, you got to develop a backhand before you can compete on tour. So I think that Cole Radalin, he's a blossoming star. I think give him a few years, he'll be a household name.
Dang, shooting down the forehand only, guys. Just,
well,
just
come out. I mean, if you're going to say it, I didn't say it.
You just said you got to develop a backhand. So I think that was
I mean, you could have overhands. I mean,
I was going to say, very interesting comparison with Isaac Robinson, who's someone that actually is the exact opposite. He is a backhand only player. So I don't know why you compare him to that guy.
Sorry.
Sure. But still, like, that's a huge hole in not having a forehand. So can I start? Sorry.
You can go for it.
Now I will say, Trevor, I don't know if I'm disrespected that you didn't come to me and ask my opinion on Cole, someone that hasn't really been on coverage that much, to be like, hey, have you watched this guy? Is this guy legit or not? Cause I would have told you the kid's legit. And honestly, the thing that was holding him back the most was his aggressive putting. He had a very similar putt to AB, when AB was just like throwing basically like laser beams from like 40 feet. And if he missed, he had a 40-foot comeback. That was very similar to Cole's putting. That was something he worked on this offseason. And I think you can see that now when he puts. It's still very aggressive, but it's more under controlled. I am not surprised to see him do well. He, like Hunter was saying, he literally has everything. The only thing now is to try to figure out how to win down the stretch, which is something that I do think some people have and some people don't. So that will be very interesting to see when he gets put in that position. Can he pull it off, and can he throw the shots and make the putts that he needs to, similar to what we have seen with now Gannon, whenever Gannon's in contention towards the end, it's not a question of like, oh no, is he going to blow up and hurt himself? But yeah, watching the kid last year, I would have told you, Trevor, do not make that bet. It is only a matter of time because he also is one of the furthest throwers on tour, which doesn't get talked about. And that is a massive advantage, yeah. Being able to throw as far as he does.
I mean, I was acting out of emotion, but also like anytime you make a bet with the idea of winning on the pro tour is what you're betting against. Like I could bet that against some very good players and still win just because of how hard it is to win. But yeah, I mean, I've seen him play now and I'm being convinced. If you asked me the question now, I would answer it differently, but that's not what I made the bet. And you know what? I still feel comfortable knowing that all I have to do is have him not do the hardest thing to do, which is win on tour. So
Is silver events count?
No.
Oh,
Elite Series. Okay, so that bet me.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
Elite Series or major. It's going to be tough for him to do, but
it's going to be tough.
Very fun to watch. And he does crush. I mean, you see just like pure hyzer distance is there. And that's kind of how you know a guy throws far. If you just got to throw a hyzer and just pump it the whole way. And I saw enough of that. All right. Brody with a 1-point lead heading into our final subject. I think this one's kind of interesting. Something I was thinking of as I'm starting to see the FPO field kind of shift its way around. The FPO division is kind of in its development right now. As far as, you know, right now it is a parallel tour to the MPO tour. They are building a fan base, trying to kind of build around their superstars, but there's also some names that are shooting up. And it's kind of an interesting one. So my question is, what is better for the FPO from a viewership standpoint, you know, from a public popularity standpoint, as they're trying to grow, is it the big three that I have that being Paige, Kat, and Kristen dominating the, you know, winning consistently, or is it when rising stars are winning tournaments and throwing new names into the mix? What is better for popularity and viewership, Brody?
I would say right now, the big three, competing against each other is the most popular. It would be the best for the FPO. With just how new so many players are, I don't think it bodes well to just have new players jumping to the top at all the times and them competing, because you have to tell all these new stories. But then also, I think that doesn't really make the dominance that we have talked about with Kristen and Paige. I don't think, or even Katrina in that, I don't think that holds that much water if you're like, well, this person just started touring this year and is competing with these people, right? I think that kind of downplays it. I think we've also have seen in the past, we haven't really seen like a battle of where it's just like, what a shot, what a putt, this is nuts. A lot of times it's just one person cracks and then almost hands it to the other person. And I don't know if that is as interesting as a viewer watching versus two people battling head to head. And it's like first one to make a mistake loses, not who makes the least amount of mistakes lose.
Yeah,
that's my thought. And I think just looking at other sports, you have Ronda Rousey in the UFC, you have Serena Williams in tennis. Those two women, like in the last couple of years, blew up their sports. I think that is a big thing, is like having that superstar or having those superstars and build upon them.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. For sure. Hunter, how do you respond to that?
Well, as much as I want to disagree with Brody for the sake of points and possibly winning the show, I just can't do it. I think people want to see greatness. And personally, I actually think singular dominance is the best, but the big three dominance works too. I mean, if you think of other sports and what drew in eyeballs, Tiger Woods. I mean, if you think back to when Tiger Woods just won the Masters a few years ago, I remember I wasn't that into golf. I tuned in. A bunch of my friends who never even watched golf tuned in just because someone who is singularly great is doing something again. But also you look at the Golden State Warriors, Serena Williams, LeBron James, Michael Jordan. Whether you loved or hated these players, you tuned in because you wanted to see the show and you wanted to see either their continued rise to success or their ultimate demise. So I think the developing storyline of someone continuing to win or continuing to be in contention grows hype as the season progresses and people keep tuning in because they want to see, for instance, can Kristen do it again? Or rooting either for her success or her demise. And I think the big three having the dominance, it works out the best for the sport. I got to agree with Brody there.
I do think that's kind of a trap question, because I think for like the if you were to just judge the tour without the viewership and the growth of popularity, you would probably answer the other way and say, well, we want more parity. We want to see the rising stars. And those are good occasionally, but you're right in the sense that a growing tour and a growing sport and a growing platform, you need to have those big superstars carry it. Cause you were, I mean, Hunter had all the examples that is the case for like every sport, pretty much. It's those big singular names. It's not people saying, oh my gosh, like, do you remember the NBA? Like, people remember the NBA in the 80s being competitive, but they're immediately going to start talking about the names in the NBA. And like, people will talk about how like Michael Jordan lifted that sport and that league on his shoulders, essentially. Serena Williams is a great example for women's tennis. People will tune in to watch Serena Williams that would have no business watching women's tennis otherwise, you know.
Well, Paul McBeth did it for our sport too.
Exactly. And Paul did it, and Paul did it in the MPO division.
Only reason I didn't bring that up is because obviously then the COVID boom happened, and like that was a huge spike in disc golf when it was a time where like that dominance wasn't happening. But like, that's what got me hooked into disc golf.
No, that's a fair point.
He was doing something that like I just wanted to continually to watch. Like, this guy's doing something that if you take it to any other sport, we never see. And I think that's kind of what we're seeing in FPO.
One thing too that's very interesting with disc golf right now that we do not struggle with, that a lot of sports do, and it'll be interesting to see what happens when we get to the point of where these other sports are, is these tournaments, everyone's showing up and playing.
Yeah.
Golf has issues, and they've had to change a lot of things to get all their best players to show up at tournaments. Basketball has issues with load management of like guys just like the night of the game being like, I'm not playing. And then like, you know, your family spends all this, you know, saves up all this money to go watch your favorite player, and then you find out they're not even playing. We do not have that issue. And I don't think people are taking, I think people are taking for like granted that right now, of where like at every event, this is silver event, which used to be like no one really went to silver events in the first year I came on tour. This silver event will probably be like a better field than every elite event in 2020.
Yeah, and it's a stacked field.
I mean, that's just something that you can't take for granted, because eventually at one point there are going to be players that are like, yeah, I'm going to miss this elite event. We're only seeing that really with silver. Eventually players are going to be like, I don't need to play this many times during the year.
Yeah, well, I think it's already starting to implement itself a little bit. You know, Paul leaving for Europe, Dickerson does it a little bit. Drew Gibson right now taking a break. But you're right, for most events, you know, it is something that is, you know, won't always be that way, especially when the purses get bigger and what have you. But with that being said, Brody Smith is our winner today. His first win on the show, winning 19-18. It was a great show. You earned the win today. Do you have anything to say?
It took long enough, I guess. I'm going to bring something up maybe that we can talk about next week. UDisc World Rankings. It makes absolutely no sense that if you get third place and you beat the number one, number two person in the world, okay, that you somehow get more points than if you get third place and the first and second person that week was just like two random guys in the top 30. That makes no sense to me. You get more points because you beat better players. Does that make sense? So like, who's number one right now? Ricky, and then it goes Paul. So you get third.
I think Gannon jumped Paul. I think right now it goes.
I think it doesn't really matter. I think Paul's.
Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
But my point being, third place is freaking hard to do. And if everyone's in the field, it doesn't matter who you beat. If you got third place, I don't understand that at all. That makes no sense to me. What also doesn't make any sense to me is the fact that Paul lost like 6 points or something to Ricky.
Yeah,
no, that makes no sense to me either.
That's the bigger flaw. And like, I know there was a time
Ricky 100% would not be number one player in the world if he finished. And I'm not saying anything with his like hand injury and DNFing, and that's why he did it. I'm not speculating that others can, but if he would have finished, Paul would have been number one player in the world.
Not playing right now does have almost no effect on your UDisc ranking. I know Sexton a while back was hanging around when he wasn't playing, and he was hanging around in like the top 15 for the longest time.
Still number 16.
Yeah. But I mean, I know, you know, Brody, your climb up the UDIS rankings has been a long journey, and it will continue, and it's going to happen these days.
Yeah, and again, this isn't me even talking about my rankings. This is me like more looking towards the top of what happens there. Well,
Austin Turner jumped like 40 spots, so
no one cares. Well, yeah, did you see the people he beat? Yeah. No one cares. No one cares about the world rankings that much. But eventually they will matter. Like eventually someone's going to be like, all right, the top 50 get into this event. And then people are going to start caring. And it's like, first off, what world ranking is the one that matters right now?
Ours, the power rankings. Our power rankings are the only
one. The universe rankings is what matters.
You guys' power rankings weren't that bad this week.
All right. Yeah. Well, hey, there you go.
I don't like the Matty O slander. I don't like the Matty O slander at all. But other than that.
He's still in the top 10.
Yeah, but you know.
All right. Well,
you guys slander the man every time. But,
hey, Brody Smith using his first win platform for the greater good.
Hey, grow the sport, man.
Just an all around solid guy. Grow the sport. Spirit of the game. All that stuff.
Super spirited guy.
Anyways, that was another episode of Debate Night. Hopefully you enjoyed. Brody Smith is now a one time winner. That's just going to bring a whole new element into things now. Joining the winner circle.
I need a crown whenever I'm right here.
Okay. Yeah, sure. Silas will totally do that. anyway, just imagine there's a crown right now in Brody's
corner. Just saying like next episode, there needs to be a crown right here so people know I have one championship.
Oh, maybe we could add that as a graphic. I don't know. Silas might kill me. But anyways, if you're watching and you think you could take down Brody Smith and be the next Debate Night champion, make sure to reach out to us. I've gotten a few auditions just in the past few days.
I got an in-person audition.
There you go.
At the tournament.
Or you can just find Brody apparently and just talk him down.
I told him to get in contact with you, but he was coming up to me being like, I need to debate you on the show. And I was like, I don't handle that.
Listen, the guy who made fun of me also gave, he was like, how can I get on this thing?
Put him on the show.
Hey, wait. Listen, I need to specify. I saw him like a week later. He invited me to his putting league, and I kind of want to go. So I need him to not hate me.
No.
This guy's going on the show. We are match. Yes.
Yeah, and I'm going to give you the win guaranteed. This is going to be your points. Just going to the absolute moon. All right. Hey, thanks, everybody, for watching. We'll see you again next week.